From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. This week's guest on Naps Chat is Naps Executive Vice President Chuck Mulador. We will be talking about last month's National Association of Postal Supervisors Legislative Conference and Lobbying Days conducted in our nation's capital. But before we move there, I'd like to discuss and bring to your attention a Postal Inspector General's audit report on the new Regional Processing and Distribution Center in Richmond, Virginia. The Inspector General's report was released March 28th, about a week ago. As we can all attest, particularly postal customers impacted by the changes, the new Richmond postal enterprise did not go according to plan. Performance suffered dramatically and operational costs increased. The Inspector General's bottom line was that the Postal Service needs to use the lessons learned from the Richmond fiasco prior to implementing facility changes anywhere else. Regrettably, and notwithstanding the Inspector General's sage advice, it's full speed ahead with other consolidations. Not surprisingly, other initiated consolidations are also degrading performance. Just look at Atlanta and Houston, and Congress is weighing in. One point is notable in the Inspector General report, and this relates to Congress. That is, the failure to communicate with postal customers. In its formal management response, the Postal Service bristled at this recommendation to communicate with its stakeholders, asserting that it did not have to, and that the Postal Service's dashboard that it posts on its website, though it's hard to find, is sufficient. Chuck, NAPS, as the representative of supervisors, managers, and postmasters, many who interact with community and local business leaders, as well as Congress on a regular basis, you know, how do you think that they would respond to this sort of glib reply by the Postal Service to the Inspector General's recommendation to communicate better?
Well, Bob, first of all, thank you for having me on Naps Chat again. Always love being on Naps Chat and talking to the members about pressing issues for us. And so, to your point, it's not surprising, I guess, the response, because organizationally, we've been trying to get some clarity and transparency on a variety of issues going on in the Postal Service, on the SNDC process, this mail processing facility review process, the logistics transformations that are going on, all of these things that we're asking about, the PRC is asking about, and now, finally, thankfully, Congress is asking about in terms of cost savings, service issues. These are all of the things that the Postmaster General has been reluctant to share with anyone for, I'm not sure why. I don't think we've got a reason to know why not share this information, why not be transparent about it. He says it's proprietary and so forth, but really it isn't. The cost savings should be available for anybody to see. I mean, if you're not saving money, then why are you doing it? Why would you as a business entity undergo massive changes and realignments if it's going to cost you money to do those? So these are the questions that people want to know. No one is saying anything nefarious is going on or anything bad is going on. But what we're saying is any public entity such as the Postal Service should be accountable to its stakeholders and ultimately to the American public, who, as you see, as we're all seeing on TV channels across our country, in local communities in Houston, in Chicago, in Richmond, in Atlanta, there's almost regular newscasts about the poor service, the lack of transparency, the unwillingness to respond to questions. So it just begs the question, why? And I guess we'll continue to push that issue with the PRC, with members of Congress. You know, we meet with them all the time. And what's one of the first questions they ask us when we sit, we go up there for a variety of issues to talk to them about? The first question a United States senator or a House member says to us is, what's going on with the post office? All I'm hearing from my constituents is how bad the service is and this and that. So happy that the OIG issued a report on Richmond. I'm sure they'll be doing other facilities as well. But we have to keep pressing this issue about transparency and accountability.
When our folks go up to the Hill, as they did when they were here in Washington, we asked them to file lobbying reports, which they did online. And we had a significant number of them being returned, almost 300, as I recall. And ordinarily, when we ask questions on the lobbying report, we say we bring to the Capitol Hill particular our legislative priorities, and we ask for input from our members when they return the lobbying reports to say, how was that? Mm-hmm. How did it go? What we found out this time, and you and I looked at these lobbying reports, mm-hmm. is that it was more of like a two-way, multi-lane highway between our folks and members of Congress. And members of Congress were telling our people, as you just relayed, mm-hmm. about performance issues they're having. And mm-hmm. it's just not Richmond. It's just not Atlanta. I mean, that's in right. the Rocky Mountain states, Colorado, Nevada, it's a nationwide situation. How does that strike you that now our members are being lobbied by Congress?
Right.
On postal issues.
It's unusual. And that's a twist that we noticed a few months ago, right? We became the information source of record for so many members of Congress because they could not get information from the Postal Service. They're writing to the Postal Service, writing to the Postmaster General, and getting form letters back from staff over there. And they don't like it. They're not getting answers. So they turn to us for questions and issues. You know, we met with Congressman Green in Houston, Congressman Sessions about issues in Houston. We met with a variety of members about issues all over the country. Senator Rosen with questions and issues in Nevada. So it's too many to name. So we've become almost, you know, hey, the repository of, well, here's what we know. And we tell them, here are the data sources. And really, like we always say, you know, don't believe us, but here's the location of the data. You can follow the data. You can follow the service issues, and then you decide for yourself. And we've heard from how many members of Congress have we heard from? I've got staff dedicated now to listening to customers, constituents call with issues about the Postal Service. It's taking them an enormous amount of time for members of Congress. And so now they're asking those questions. But again, they're not getting a lot of answers. So we continue to build those relationships with them. And our members are very educated. Our members out in the field are very knowledgeable about what's going on. And they're telling the members of Congress when they met with them and the staff, here's what I can tell you from what I see in my particular area. So we're filling in the blanks for a lot of members of Congress. And it's a tribute really to our membership that they pay attention. They know what's going on. They got the message at LTS, the focus of the messaging at LTS. And they've relayed that now to the point where they've built relationships where they are also becoming out in the field, out in their home districts. They're becoming the agent of information, agent of record for postal issues. So it's a great credit, I think, to our organization, to our members.
Let's talk about the legislative conference for a moment. And what we also do, in addition to asking our members to file lobbying reports, we do a survey of how well we did. Mm-hmm. at the legislative conference, and it was attended by around 500 individuals. And based on our post-conference online survey, over two-thirds of those responding to that survey, online survey, indicated that the conference overall was excellent. And combined with the satisfied category, we topped off at over 99% approval. Do you have any reaction to that extraordinary measure of success?
Well, it's almost, well, you use the word extraordinary, and it truly is. And it's a credit to a couple of things. One, I think, is messaging and having a good message to take to the Hill. And we've got good pieces of legislation out there that we support. They are good messengers. I'm talking about the delegates who come to LTS. They come motivated and ready to go. We arm them with the data, with the information that they need to go to the Hill, and they make that case up there. They definitely do that. And I think a lot of it just goes back to how we do LTS. A lot of credit to you, Bob. You work with me on all of these matters. The staff here, the other resident officers. You know, it's we get some of the accolades because we're kind of the face of it, but really it's we, not me. And it's a team effort. There's a lot that goes into that 2 days that we are at LTS. A lot goes into it, and a lot of work behind the scenes that we all do here and the staff does as well. So I think it's just a credit to everybody. It's a credit to our organization, and the stature that we have gained on the Hill, I think, really is a testament to the messaging and to the people and to the knowledge base that we have. And we're using so many tools now legislatively for people to give people information. And I know you're going to talk about the scorecard, but we're using so many tools now to give them the information and the data they need. And I'm just very happy and pleased because, you know, we pay attention to that, right? If people say, well, the conference was bad, then I'd want to know, well, why was it bad? What did you think was bad about it? And if you think it was good, what did you think was good about it? What did you like about it? So we can expand upon that and maybe make it even better next year. So I really like the fact that we switched to this online version of doing it. I think it makes it easier for people to do it than the old paper version was. And look, ask any marketing organization if they could get a response rate that we get from 500 people in a survey. They would be thrilled to have that, and we have a great response rate, and it gives us great guidance moving forward.
On our response rate, on the survey, one of the most well-rated components of the conference was the presentation and hands-on activity conducted by our legislative technical support crew at Voter Voice. Could you talk about that activity that Voter Voice conducted at the legislative conference, and why do you think it was so well-received?
I think I enjoyed it myself. It gave people, I think, an insight that, you know, you and I have, and Ivan and Jimmy here have, on how we develop some of these legislative proposals and how we go about attacking the data, so to speak. And I think it maybe was somewhat informational and eye-opening for our members to see that there is a lot of data behind the things that we do and how we develop these programs and processes. So he gave a great presentation. I thought it was fascinating, and it was, you know, interactive, right? You could go right along and show you how to do certain things and get on the legislative page of the website. And I think it's a great tool that we have, and I think it was a great learning experience for members to see, you know, how the legislative page is set up and why it's set up the way it is and how we focus and why we focus on the things that we do. And so much of it is data-driven through Voter Voice.
And he did speak about the importance of digital communications with members of Congress, and he walked us through an advocacy project at the legislative conference to actually impress upon, in the particular case that we were engaged in, the importance of S-3356, the Postal Reform Act, as introduced by Senators Durbin and Collins, and he walked us through that process.
Yeah, and that's what I think was so instructive. One of the things we tried to do this year at LTS that I think we heard in previous years, right, through some of the surveys, that folks wanted more training. They want to know practical aspects of how and why we're doing the things that we do. And I think the Voter Voice, you know, it's instructive for us here. And I think sharing that with the members showed them how it was so instructive to them and how they can use the technology to effectively communicate, not just message a member of Congress, but to effectively communicate the message so that they understand it, they're interested in it, they want to find more out about it, and they want to pursue helping us get that legislation through a committee or to the floor for a vote. So I really appreciated the presentation. I think, again, we'll continue to get that message that our members want more tools to effectively present the message that we're sending to Congress.
Continuing with that and responding to suggestions made, in fact, at this legislative conference, we inserted onto our website now a scorecard for co-sponsorship of our legislative priorities, and it evaluates members of Congress by that metric. Can you talk a little bit about our NAPS legislative scorecard?
Yeah, and I just saw it, just developed it with Voter Voice, and it really, I think, is going to I would say, be a game changer. I don't think that's over dramatic to say that, because, you know, we're promoting a certain levy of bills, right? H.R. 594, 595, 82, 597, 3005, in the Senate, 3356, a variety of bills that we know would benefit NAPS members in a variety of ways. And we ask for co-sponsorship and so forth from members of Congress when we meet with them. So the scorecard will kind of give people a measurement of just how is your senator in your state doing with important legislation that we talk about, and how is your House member doing? So we'll continue to roll that out for people to take a look at, give them some education on it throughout the rest of this year and beyond, of course, so that they can look on there and see, oh, my congressman is not a co-sponsor of H.R. 3005, but should be, or my senator has not co-sponsored S-3356, but should be. Now I can more effectively target my messaging, knowing that they are not on a bill that I, as a member, told them was important to NAPS. And let's be honest about it, Bob. We meet with a lot of these senators and congressmen. They want our help financially to continue either to get elected or to be elected. And we've started to tune the messaging to, well, that's great. We want to help you continue as a member of Congress. However, we need something from you, and that's co-sponsorship as well as pushing these legislative priorities that we have forward through your committee or onto the floor of the House or the Senate. So it's going to be a very instructive for people to see just how simple it is to use and how they can see how the member of Congress is doing getting the message out.
Interestingly, on the website, you can pivot from your member of Congress. Like if you go into your bill, let's say I'm from the state of, I live in the state of Maryland. Right. And if my congressman is not on a particular bill or my senator's on a particular bill, mm-hmm. and I notice that on the scorecard, I can pivot from there immediately to the Legislative Action Center, mm-hmm. which is on the same sort of page,
right.
and write them that letter off of our website.
Right.
So it's all integrated.
It is. And again, you, to get back to your point about what did people find so valuable about having a voter voice at the conference, this is it. This is the value of having something like voter voice to build these kind of legislative scorecards for us, these legislative messaging for us that makes us more effective and most effective on the Hill. Versus, you know, just trying to carry a message forward and knock on doors and so forth. So it's just more tools that we have. It's I'm excited about it. And I know our members will be too, because they really are now, I think, legislatively engaged. And again, one of the messages we told them at LTS was that, you know, people can't afford to be non-political anymore. Part of the message at LTS was, right, it's a political year. 2024 is a very political year, and the legislative agenda will be driven largely by the political landscape. So we have to all become political, whatever your issues are and however you feel about anything, we have to become political. We can't sit on the sidelines anymore. Our very future as an organization, postal service-wise and NAPS-wise, is dependent upon it.
One of the key issues we did bring to the Hill was protecting postal employees, postal property in the mail through restoring the opportunity for postal police officers
right.
to actually protect employees' property in the mail, whether it's in a postal facility or outside of a postal facility.
Right.
Could you talk about a little bit about our legislative offensive on that issue?
Yeah, and just to pivot back a bit, having Frank Albergo there, who is the president of the Postal Police Officers Union, I think he was a hit, I would say, with our members. He gave them a real-life examples of why this is important. And we have our interest in is that we have supervisors that manage the postal police officers. So that's how we got involved in this and working with their union to get this legislation rolling in the House, ultimately in the Senate. And I really credit Frank with bringing it home for people that they really got a good version of. So it was great having Frank there. We appreciate him coming, taking some time to do that. But we've heard some things, and so we began to do a little pivoting because we heard from certain people in the house that there are internal issues in the house that are causing us to maybe have to work on some other angles in the Senate. So we've kind of shifted our focus to the Senate, where we think we have a good opportunity. I think we believe that we have a good opportunity to get this bill, I see, out of committee onto the floor of the Senate for a vote. And I do believe if it gets to the floor of the Senate, it'll pass. So that would be historic in and of itself. So we're kind of going the other way. We started with H.R. 3005, the Garbarino Republican from New York, Pascrell, Democrat from New Jersey bill that they had large bipartisan support for. And S-3356 with Durbin and Collins bipartisan support in the Senate. So, you know, we react to what we hear on the Hill. There are those that want to see this legislation pass, but they tell us, you know, here's the avenue for you to take. And that's what we're doing. So we're asking our people out there in the field to kind of shift some of your attention to get your senators on board with this legislation. I know you and I are meeting with people, talking to staff, and we're meeting with people all the time. And when they come back next week, we'll be up there again talking to senators before they go on break for Passover later this month. So it's an all hands on deck effort. It's something that's important. It's vital, I think, that we have law that would require the post office to do what it should do and always did do, which have postal police officers on the street protecting and doing the best they can to prevent crime against people who work for the Postal Service. Yeah.
Right around the time of our legislative conference, interestingly, the Fraternal Order of Police joined on and became and sent letters up to the Senate endorsing the Durbin-Collins bill. But just as important, next month, I understand the National Association of Police Organizations will be having their lobbying day, and this will likely be one of their priorities when they come up to the Hill. Yeah. So,
it's amazing to me to watch the growth of this legislation. But by the way, it's NAPS sponsored legislation. This is a NAPS bill on both sides of Congress, House and Senate. I'll remind you that the other organization that claims that they represent management in the post office, but that's debatable, they don't support this. They don't support it because the Postal Service doesn't support it. So while we are out fighting to protect not only carriers and clerks and others and the public at large, but also our supervisors, managers, and the postmasters that we represent, to protect them and do the best we can and do everything we can to make sure that when they go to work in the morning, they can come home to their families in the evenings. And that's what it's all about. And these are, and what these police organizations are telling members of Congress, this is a policing bill. This is a safety bill. This is important because it protects police officers doing their job, which is to protect all of us. So it's unfortunate that we had to go this route to try to force to amend Title 18, to force the Postal Service to do the right thing. It's unfortunate that they're fighting it. However, I think that with all the resources that we have to put into it, that we can marshal and push with it, we know we're not going to stop until we get votes on these bills. And that's a commitment that I know we have made here at headquarters. And that's a commitment we're going to push through our members in the field to get this legislation passed. It's a good bill. It's a good policing bill. It's a law and order bill. It's the right thing to do.
Last question, Chuck. Great. We had our legislative conference. It's complete. We're now a month away from it. You and I are working the Hill, going up there to visit with members of the House, members of the Senate, their staff members. Over the next few months, what should NAPS members be doing?
Just keep on keeping on. Keep doing what they've been doing. I think it's important. We left, they left here first week in March, very active, very motivated. We're continuing to get feedback from the field where they're meeting with their legislators at home. Remember, they're home now for Easter. They'll be back in a few weeks. They'll be going back home again at the end of the month for Passover, for break at Passover. So they're in their home districts doing work, having meetings, attending events and so forth in their district. We encourage all of our members to go to those. We'll sponsor you to get there to bring the message forward. So keep checking the website. Check the Legislative Action Center. Look at the scorecard. And just keep making those calls and sending that messaging out. And I think that's what's effective. I think that's what's really going to work for us. And it shows the power, I think it shows the power that NAPS has and the respect that NAPS has on the Hill. And I'll just say, having you here is a huge benefit to us. I read a piece of information in a magazine today where you were attacked by the president of this other organization that claims to represent management employees. And I found it very offensive. And I know that you're too good of a person to take affront to it, but I do because, we're out here on the front lines on the Hill trying to fight for these issues. And this organization, because they chose the wrong dance partner in our lawsuit, is now taking up an issue to come after you because they don't like the fact that you're well-respected on the Hill, that because of your work in the past, in your career, we've been able to be effective on the Hill communicating our messaging now. So, we'll keep treading the waters. We'll keep fighting the battles against whoever wants to stand up, because we're strong, we're tough, we have the resources to do it with, we have the power to do it with, we have the brains and the brawn to do it, and that's what we're all about. We're not about carrying the water for the post office, we're about doing what's right for postal employees and NAPS members. That's who we are, that's what we do. We don't take anything personal messaging out there at all, we just tell the facts, that's what we do. And if others out there can't handle that, then, that's just too bad for them. But I know who we are and what we do. I know what our resident officers are committed to. I know what you're committed to, the staff here. And I know what our members expect us to do. And we're going to keep on doing it until we get where we need to be and we get these legislative issues passed and brought to fruition. So, again, I appreciate all the work that you do, Bob. I work with you every day. And I appreciate the work that you do on the Hill and the work you do on behalf of NAPS members. And I think it's very unfortunate when some other organization is desperately taking pot shots at someone who works here on our staff. So I just want to get that out there and then to thank everybody who came to LTS and thank our members for all the hard work they do every day in an increasingly difficult environment in the Postal Service.
Well, I want to thank you. That was NAPS Executive Vice President Chuck Mulador. And a thank you for joining us today on NAPS Chat. Thanks, Chuck.
Always love it.
Also, I want to thank NAPS Chat listeners for logging on this week. If you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
Write down and write myself a letter. And make